Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
He basically has the same openings as 5 years ago. He has the same preparation from the last candidates. He hasn't changed anything.
Permanently broken. That's what Magnus said. And that was quite a while ago, actually. I think before Norway. No, there's definitely some tilt with Jan. Obviously, something that can be changed. But he's such a streaky player, yeah? Whenever he wins, whenever he has positive results, he's such a difficult player to play against. And then as soon as he finds some resistance, it seems he's completely off his game. It's very strange.
No, like, I understand that all my complaints last year can basically apply the other way.
Yes.
On the other hand, like, okay, it's a somewhat selfish view, but, you know, it's almost always in either Central Asia, Eastern Europe, this event.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the C-Squared podcast. We are just about done with the Sinkfield Cup. A couple of events since we last discussed. St. Louis Ravens Blitz, Sinkfield Cup, a lot of things have happened in those. And that's the end of the Grand Chess Tour. What's up, Fabi?
Yeah, that's the end.
That's the end. It feels like the end, right? It feels like something has just finished. It feels like...
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't feel like much continuity in this one. I didn't feel like it was like a tour, for me at least, just like one event after the other. It felt a bit broken up for me.
Why is that? Is it because they were just like closely next to each other in terms of distance?
I don't know. I think it's just
spread out less.
Just a personal... Yeah, it was pretty close, that's true. Because after Zagreb, we had like a relatively short break.
Yeah.
I mean, not too short, but... Yeah, it was, I don't know, I think it was just a personal thing. Like, I, maybe also at the end, my thoughts were a bit scattered, so. And it was kind of clear after, like, the first round that probably Alireza is going to win the Grand Chess Tour, so okay. I didn't check out, but I was no longer thinking about, like, winning it. While before the Rapid Blitz, I was thinking, okay, I'm probably a favorite to win it, but yeah.
It almost feels like this race was kind of decided in two games. It was your game against Anish, and your game against Alireza, because if you didn't lose that game against Anish, you don't split the points.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I thought it was a bit strange we split the points because I did win the tiebreak, which is a rapid tiebreak, but like the rapid events count for the same as classical. So normally this rapid tiebreak should be, the playoff should be like consequential.
Yeah.
But it was just consequential for money and for FIDE circuit points. So I'm not complaining, of course. I mean, it was important for me that I won. But it just feels a bit inconsistent that this one is not counted for the Grand Chess Tour, and then, but the rapid events are super important, so.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's, I think Alireza definitely deserved to win just because he won two of the last events. So.
He certainly did. No. He played well. He really played well. I feel like he probably played the most consistent chess in the last few events, at least. He got his fair share of luck, but that's needed.
Yeah.
I mean, you cannot win the Grand Chess Tour without a little bit of luck.
I mean, everyone had luck. That's the thing.
Everybody had.
Or, and it always balances. Yeah, it tends to balance. I mean, like, people will point to this game against Alireza and say, okay, this is why I didn't win it. But then you look at, like, my game against Jan in particular, and okay, you can't, it's like, you can't just single up individual games in the tournament.
No way. No, that's, I feel that's the variance of chess, more or less, and the variance of any competition. Whenever you go up the ranks, you get some luck. Whenever you go down, you know, you get some unfavorable luck, let's say.
Yeah, you'll have these periods of, you can call it bad luck. Like, for me, bad luck can be that you don't get chances in a tournament. That's like typical bad luck. Your opponents just play too well. But on the other hand, you kind of have to create your chances. Although it's true that sometimes you know, you try your best and you just don't create chances. But in this tournament, I don't feel like there was a single player who did not have chances. I think it was a very open race. Maybe the player with the least chances was Wesley, if you look at the like missed opportunities. But again, Wesley, he actually did get a lucky break against Jan. He had a strange event. He had like just very bad positions with the black pieces every single game.
and he lost a crucial game, but also he was just like much worse against losing against Prague, much worse against Ding, worse against Gukesh. It was just like one bad get position after another. And even his defensive skills couldn't save him from all of them.
That's actually an interesting storyline because I felt, especially with his choice of openings, that it's not the usual Wesley that we see. The very solid, choosing the most solid lines, the most safe lines as well. He was taking some risks in the opening, not only with black, also with white. I remember that game against Anish.
Yeah, first round against Anish,
where he played the reverse Benoni structures. He accepted the reverse Benoni structures.
I mean, he had some prep in mind, but I'm not sure what it was exactly against Anish. He maybe felt like he's a bit desperate to like win, to try to get a chance, because it's hard in the openings. You have to take chances with white to get opportunities. But with black, I felt like he just played his normal stuff, and it was honestly like a little bit, I feel like his openings are a bit stagnant.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, he's a really great player. But if you look at, like, last year, he lost to me in the exact same line as the Nimzo. Yeah, he played c5, and he lost from the opening. And now, against Noderbeck, he plays c5 against the Nimzo with e3, and he more or less loses from the opening again, the exact same line, more or less in the same round of the same tournament, 1 year apart. And he's clearly struggling, like, the bishop g5 Italian against Prague, against Ding, which was surprising. Ding is playing the bishop g5 Italian. So, like, you have to work hard to cover your kind of the holes in your chest, if you want to call it that game. Like, you have some weaknesses in your repertoire, and he's not, from my perspective, it feels like he is getting in trouble more than he used to with the black pieces, and that's probably down to perhaps like a lack of very concentrated work at it. Hunogan, I guess.
Yeah, if we want to talk about this very specific bishop g5 line, it seems like a lot of people are gravitating towards that, even against Ding, right? Alireza, then MVL also, just for the simple fact that it maintains chances and it maintains the tension. We cannot really simplify that easily with lab.
I mean, this is what I was thinking like a year ago. You have very limited directions in terms of creating a game in the openings, but the bishop you've got Italian is one of them. Like, you take a serious risk with white because you entomb your bishop. Very often you even get attacked with g5, h5. And you could see times when it backfires. But if you actually want to get a game where the computer evaluation is not too relevant because it's just so complicated and people can't figure out the positions, and where it's difficult to analyze, especially because it's not concrete, you go in this direction. And if you're very confident, it can work out. Like Alireza, basically, his strategy is clear against Ding. He just plays his line. He actually doesn't care about the evaluation of the position, but he figures that it's just like a lot of tension, and eventually Ding will make a mistake. It's entirely what happened in the game. I'm sure that he had basically had a plan before the game that worked out exactly as we saw in the game.
How do you feel about Alireza's chess in general? It seems like it's evolving. It's getting more mature, right? He's starting to make better decisions in the opening. It seems like he's starting to cover his grounds, as you just mentioned, much better in the opening phase as well. It definitely helps that he has his coach traveling with him, Ivan Chaparinov, it seems like. There seems to be a good energy between the two, which definitely helps.
It's been clear to me for many, many months that he's playing well. I thought the results at some point would come back for him to, like, okay, it doesn't immediately show, but I could tell that he was working a lot on his openings for already at least 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the candidates, I felt like he was working on his openings. But in the candidates, it didn't work out. Like, it can't always work out. Okay, he did kind of crash in that tournament. But even after that, I saw in these online events, like, he was dangerous with the white pieces. He was looking for chances. In Bucharest, I felt he's working hard, and he's definitely one of the more ambitious players, like, for a long time now. His chess doesn't, like, stagnate in a way that I think a lot of players, you can actually see that it does. And that tends, like, I think Ding is a very good example.
Yeah.
Just, like, completely stagnant chess and openings for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at his loss against Maxim in the last round, or if you look at some of his other openings, he basically has the same openings as 5 years ago. He has the same preparation from the last candidates. He hasn't changed anything. Maxime basically targeted him in a line that he beat, that Ding beat Rapport in the 2022 candidates. Exactly the same approach, knight a5, knight h5. He hasn't, I think, clearly looked at the line since then. I mean, I understand that he's going through a difficult period where it's probably hard to work on chess, but if you don't work on chess, this is what happens. You play the same openings, you get targeted by ambitious players, like Maxime needed to win that game. I think Maxime is also working hard on his chess recently, and his results will improve. They're starting to, but they'll continue. I think he'll be over 2750.
You think he's going to come back?
Yeah, by sometime next year, he'll be over 2750, I think. Alireza will continue to have good results. And
a huge weight off his shoulders of Maxime's, because he was really cutting it close and not making it to the next year's GC.
Yeah, it wasn't, he made it last.
Yeah, he needed to win. It was clear. And I know that Maxime...
A situation.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a loss didn't actually hurt him as much as a draw compared to a win. And I know Maxime, generally speaking, he's like a mathematical guy, so he's looking at the numbers, and he calculates before the tournament what he needs. So he was definitely looking at, like, at Wesley and him, and okay, it was clear that one of the two is going to get the third place.
Yeah.
And Wesley's ahead, so Maxime has to win. And that's what happened. Wesley failed to protect his plus one score that he achieved at some point. So, yeah. Maxime played overall well.
Did Wesley lose that he lost his plus one?
Maxime lost to Noderbeck. Wesley lost to Noderbeck in the Nimza line, the one I mentioned.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that was just simply too easy.
Yeah.
That was so easy. You beat him in like 15 moves.
And now he lost like...
Now he lost again in 20 moves, yeah.
That's the line to target Wesley.
Okay, I'm sure.
I mean, at some point he needs to fix it, but basically if you lose in a line, there's no excuse for not like taking it very seriously. I made the same mistake in the past, but yeah, like if you lose in a line, you just like spend all your attention on that line until you're sure that you'll never lose again. Because the other thing is, it's psychologically, if you get it again, if you lose in a line very badly, like he did against me, and then you get it again, and you start to feel stupid over the board if you're not prepared. So you have to like make sure that you don't feel stupid, because then it messes with your head too. And it was an interesting tournament. I mean, Alireza definitely deserved it. He played overall like, yeah, start was shaky, but overall it was a good performance, very good performance. And I even had chances to catch up near the end. I just had to beat Gukesh, and I would maybe share first place.
Yeah. No, I mean, you definitely played a very decent event after the first round. After the first round, I mean, he scored plus three.
Yeah, third round
would have probably gotten plus four, as you just mentioned. So
yeah, I could have. I mean, okay,
not a bad.
Against Jan was very lucky. That was just a gift, pure gift. Against Quarterback was semi-lucky. Normally, I'm not winning that position, but maybe I'm drawing it. But yeah, I had my share of good fortune. And against Gukesh, I could have won. I had one tactic. If I find that tactic, I'm maybe like 80% to win the game. But I just didn't spot the tactic.
Yeah. Okay, we have to talk about Ding. Permanently broken. That's what Magnus said. And that was quite a while ago, actually. I think before Norway.
During Norway Chess, right?
Was it during?
Maybe before. I'm not sure. But it was around that time.
Before. And then obviously during Norway, we kind of understood that he might be right about it. And now... he was starting to show some signs of him recovering in Astana at the Rapid and Blitz Team Championship. And now, to be honest, he's kind of back to that sense of not belonging, it seems like, especially in the last... If you make him play more than three to four hour games, he's starting to collapse almost always.
I think it's
like
clear
something
that...
Something bad happened.
No, at the start, I thought maybe he's you know, playing normally. Like, I thought it was weird in the first round against Gukesh, he gets a very promising position. And then as soon as the position is promising, he just, like, forces a repetition. Bishop d3, bishop g6, and rook g6, and repetition, like...
He kind of did the same thing against you.
Yeah, and then I started to feel like, okay, this is a bit weird. I mean, first round, you can say, yeah, it's first round, whatever. And then he, against Wesley, I was impressed with how he got chances. Thought... Also playing the Italian, something new for him. But after that, it was like, yeah, okay, against Wesley, he also
missed an advantage, but maybe it was not so easy. You know, maybe it's a complex position. Against me, it was just very strange. It's like you have a clear and completely risk-free advantage that will last forever. Maybe you won't win. I don't know. It's like 50-50. Maybe you won't win. I wasn't like super depressed thinking I'm going to lose this game, but I was worried. And objectively, maybe it was losing. But you don't risk. Like, you just keep the pieces on and you move around and whatever. Like, you might go for the wrong plan. I was thinking the right plan was not to play f4, knight g1, h3, g5. I thought this was very dubious for black, or very dangerous at the very least. The computer just says that you play g3, which I didn't realize, and then you play g4 later, and slowly black's position comes under strong pressure. But knight f4 is just an insanity move. I like, you don't risk. Why are you killing the tension? He also had 40 minutes. It's not like things could go wrong for him.
And the thing is, in the first part of the game, it feels like the old thing. He's actually able to find very good moves and put a lot of pressure on his opponents. He got, as you just mentioned, a lot of good positions out of the opening and out of the middle game. But as soon as he was getting down the last few minutes, it seems like something is just clicking off at that particular moment. It's very strange to see.
But against the deck was also weird. I just don't understand. Like, okay, the previous games against me was weird, but against Noderbeck, it's like, it's an hour on the clock. It's clear that you are, well, at least slightly better.
Yeah.
And then after the game, he's saying that he thinks he's slightly worse.
Right.
And it's just impossible that you're slightly worse.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you're slightly worse, then chess doesn't make any sense anymore. It's like you have the dark squares completely. I mean, black's pawn structure is damaged. Like, there's potential for black to just lose. Like, if you get the knight to some nice square, f4, h5, f6, and the h5
pawn, yeah.
So there's potential for things to get lost for black, or maybe black will survive eventually. But there's no world where you're worse. At least that is like completely foreign to me that someone would believe that. But against me, he played the first half extremely well.
Oh, he played well.
He showed good understanding. Rook A2.
Rook B3, yeah.
Yeah, he traded at the right moment, which I didn't even realize that he was... I thought he would keep the tension more, but he traded on D6 at the right moment. Everything was very nice. Of course, I did go for a line where he has a lot of experience and it's sort of his type of position, so maybe not the best opening choice. Then he lost to Alireza. It's like, I totally understand losing this position. But the way it happened is like you break the tension, you lose two pawns.
5 minutes, boom. I mean, equal to completely lost. He was shining, basically.
Like, I saw the expression on Ali Reza's face. It was like, what the hell is happening? After he played D5, like, what's going on? And Maxime lost the same way as Ali Reza. Just like some tension and then just goes wrong.
Very strange. Very strange.
So, yeah, I don't know about his match against... Like, Gukesh is...
He's just extremely solid, yeah?
Yeah, Gukesh is playing well. I mean, he's... He's, 50%. It's not like a great score or anything. I mean, I don't think he's going to be thrilled, but it's a fine score. But also, Gukesh, if you think about his results this year, he tied for first in Tata Steel with +4. He won the Kansas with +4. He tied for first
in Romania.
In Romania, +1, okay.
That's
not so much.
Anomaly, let's say.
+1. But still, he's fighting for first in most tournaments that he plays in. And Ding has not won a game in, like, I don't know how long. Like, maybe he beat Gukesh in Tata Steel. That's a funny thing. He actually does beat Gukesh. So, I don't know. But he hasn't won a tournament since the Sinkfield Cup, if you don't count the World Championship. Of course, we should count the World Championship match. But an actual tournament, Sinkfield Cup, it's 5 years. It's
been a while.
Yeah, and...
Wait. Yeah. He's been gone for a couple of those years. No, it's just a very strange situation. Definitely, that puts him in a very rough spot going into the World Championship match. I said from the get-go that Gukesh is a huge favorite. Right now, I think he's like a 70-30 favorite. I think the match is going to be over after 12. That's my prediction as of right now.
I would hardly bet against that. Like, we spoke about this, and I told you that I like strongly disagree.
Yeah,
but that was before like the last three rounds of the Sinkfield Cup. Still, Ding was like, okay, he's not losing any. He's getting good positions. He's playing solidly. Now it's like, okay, you get a tense position and things go wrong. I don't know. Maybe it is Also, I don't see evidence of work in Ding's play. I see evidence of work in Gukesh.
Yeah.
He, like, clearly has ideas in the opening. He plays different stuff. He's creating chances. Ding, I just don't see anything new.
Like, could it be a case that he's trying to shield his openings for the World Championship match?
But the thing is, then you can just play like some random stuff. Like, Maxime plays D3, and he plays the same repertoire from 2 years ago, from 4 years ago. I don't know. I mean, he must be working, but I don't know. I have no insight into what work he's doing. From his games, there is not a clear evidence of, like, really serious opening work.
Yeah. So, yeah, tough one. Tough one for sure. Cool. We should also talk about Nepo. Nepo, yeah, definitely is showing some weakness right now. Doesn't seem to be psychological either, it seems. I don't know when it started. Maybe in the last few rounds in Croatia. Obviously, the big tilt against Wesley, but he didn't show his usual A game in Rapid and Blitz. Struggled in Blitz. And then in the Sinfield Cup, I mean, look, he started off in the best way possible with that very nice win against Anish. Imbalanced, typical position that he likes. It seemed like he's back on track.
It was a nice game.
Yeah. And then he immediately loses against Wesley in absolutely unnecessary fashion. And that completely broke him psychologically.
Yeah, I mean, it's clearly tilt, because if you look at the last three events that he's played, wait, Bucharest, what happened? Bucharest, I mean, he played in Bucharest.
Yes.
What was his result? 50%?
I want to say 50.
I think he draws the games.
Yeah.
I think he scored 50%. Okay, that can happen.
Being remarkable.
Saw it here, Gukesh, Prague, they drew all their games. Maxime and Bucharest drew all his games. But after that, Zagreb, it's like, things are going normally, they're going fine. And then as soon as, like, things start to go poorly, it's just like instant tilt to the point of collapse. In the Blitz, I think it was very clear. He lost like 7 games in a row at some point.
I mean, he did the same in St. Louis.
Yeah, Rapid and Blitz. He was leading after Rapid with Ali Reza and Maxime. So he's like 3 points ahead of me, and we shared.
He lost 6 in a row at some point.
Yeah, and I didn't even do anything great special in Blitz. So I scored +2 in Blitz, and I made up a 3-point gap.
Yeah.
It's something during the middle of the tournament just collapsed for him. And same in Classical. Like, he's in a very good position. First 3 games +1. Then he's on his way to an easy draw against Wesley. Like, it's almost over. I mean, Wesley looked like he's ready for the draw. Jan, same. When they shook hands, I was like, was it a draw?
Yeah.
But I already understood that. Like, it's a dangerous endgame.
It's already not a draw anymore.
The deep one endgame is notoriously dangerous. I mean, Magnus lost against Grishuk in the Sinkfield Cup in 2017, I think. And maybe 2015 or 2017.
Yeah. No, there's definitely some tilt with Jan. Obviously, something that can be changed. But he's such a streaky player, yeah? Whenever he wins, whenever he has positive results, he's such a difficult player to play against. And then as soon as he finds some resistance, it seems he's completely off his game. It's very strange.
No, it's interesting, because if you like look at the candidates, generally speaking, his play is like
all stable.
Yeah, it's very stable. When he gets bad positions, he generally fights extremely well to save them. Like, you can look at the last candidates, multiple Zash, Prague, Gukesh, Hikaru.
Yeah.
Obviously, the last round we know about. Although at that point, it didn't help him to say that.
No, but he still saved him.
He still saved him.
But that's the thing.
And he does have, like, dangerous opening ideas, so he'll pick up, like, a few points with the white pieces. And then with black, he'll, like, hold on very well. He doesn't lose many games at all. In fact, if you like look at his candidates, he didn't lose in Madrid once. He didn't lose, despite having many dangerous positions, in Toronto once. And the only game he lost in Yekaterinburg in 2021. Oh, actually, he did lose to Maxime. And then he lost in the last round of Ding, but that was when he already secured first. So it's like very few losses, very few shaky moments. And then he's very dangerous, which is a good combination. And he doesn't get tilted. But then after that, he played some events, and it's like he can't control the tilt, or he can't focus in the right way.
It's two different players. Yeah,
but it's not like
Canada's Nepo and non-Canada's Nepo.
It's like he controls himself very well for the super important events.
Yeah.
But then when it's like the normal kind of slog through, you know, the tournament circuit,
it's a matter of motivation. Yeah.
You probably sure.
cannot find motivation.
I mean, if you're not taking any time in your games, then it's clearly that you can't be bothered to do it. Like, you just don't care enough.
Yeah.
But you should care because, every event is important, regardless of how, of course, it's not candidates, but it's still important. After the first round, I was also thinking, like, you know, like, what am I even doing here? But,
okay, it's first round.
Yeah, I managed to convince myself somehow to keep playing, even though I was pretty disgusted.
We had some good sushi. Good sushi.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Good sushi. Forget about it. I mean, that's the best thing you can do. Yeah, no. So that's the Singful Cup. That's the Grand Chess Tour. How are you feeling about the FIDE circuit points right now? Obviously, that's a big topic of discussion.
Yeah.
Those got updated. You're in third position, I think, right now.
Yeah.
But
everyone's played a different amount of events.
Notenbrek first with 6 events, Arjun 5, or is it?
No. With it's Notenbrek with 5, Arjun with 6. I'm with 4.
And you were with 4.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, technically, like, I played more than 4, but I think some events didn't give me any points. Like the St. Louis Wrapped in Blitz, I think.
Probably not. Yeah.
And, so actually, this shows, like, a flaw in the circuit. But also, it was favorable to me because in the last round, I think I ended up getting like 21 points more or less, and Notenbrek got like 9, which basically that won't count for him. Like 9, he'll replace it with something else. Same with Maxime. And if Maxime had not won the last round, Notenbrek would have gotten, I don't know, 17 points?
Yeah, huge.
Yeah, because fourth place, I think, doesn't give like a base circuit point. So they basically. Maybe it was 18. Maybe they just split like 18 points, huh? So, which is a flaw because like Notenbrek can't control if Maxime wins or not in the last round.
Yeah.
It's not up to him, but he gets severely penalized. And although maybe these will like balance out at some point, you know, gets good and bad luck thing again. But yeah, that Maxime one was extremely important to me, and that I one was even more important to me because if I had gotten +1, Notenbrek would have gotten more points, I would have gotten significantly less, and it would have just been, from a circuit point of view, kind of a disaster for me.
Yeah.
But now it's a good position. I'm in a... Notenbrek is maybe in the best position, because he has, like, the top events are the most important. He has the 25 points, his best performance from Prague.
Did he get any opens?
He hasn't played opens, but he will, for sure.
Yeah, you need some opens. So
we both should play 2 opens too.
Okay.
Difficult.
I saw somewhere noted that you guys need 1 open tournament, but I think it's 2, right?
Well, the minimum is 1, but then you can only count 5 events. And if you want to count 7 events, which you should if you want to fight for first, then you need 2.
Okay.
And open events are... It's not that they're difficult to come by. The problem is that they're difficult to come by with the very specific criteria that FIDE permits, which is top 8 should be 25-50 average. The top 20 should have no more than 50% from an individual country. That the tournament has to finish before December 15th, which is completely arbitrary. I don't know why they did that, because it rules out Sitges, for example. It's kind of annoying. I mean, it's a good open.
Yeah, why December 15th and not December 25th, for example?
You know, that's... But also, it raises the question. Let's say Sitges, that falls in between those dates.
Yeah.
Does it count for next year? Or does it not count at all?
It's just like...
It not count at all. Black hole.
It starts before the 15th and finishes after.
So it's just like a black hole that those dates?
That's my guess.
But the feeder rapid and blitz, which is on those dates, counts for this year.
Yeah,
like explain the logic of that.
As under the 5th.
Yeah, but it shouldn't count for this year because it needs to finish.
Oh, it counts for this year?
Yes.
As far as up to the CUNO tournaments, only the open tournaments need to finish on the 15th. The FIDE events don't have to. Okay, that makes sense.
And also you can play, I think, unlimited events that count in any country. If the average rating is high enough, it's...
I looked at the details. It's all kind of a mess.
I mean, all of these changes have obviously been implemented after the Ali Reza Canada's run, basically, because he organized his tournament.
But that wasn't for the circuit. That was for a rating spot.
So I guess they probably took that and tried to apply the lessons they learned to, like, the...
I think it was more that Mohez Yukesh played this tournament in India, and that was maybe that arranged in the last...
Maybe that...
Because now you have to submit it 3 months before.
You have to register the tournament.
Yeah, 3 months before. That means that, like, for a tournament on December 1st, it has to be registered within the next 2 days, yeah?
Yeah.
To give an exemption. And, no, like, I don't have major issues with the FIDE circuit, and always, like, some things make sense, but a lot of it is a bit arbitrary. But I'm still trying, clearly, and Noderbeck is clearly trying. There's already been open tournaments in Uzbekistan announced.
Uh-huh.
Like...
Yeah. That's another...
They're registered there.
Sure.
And I was on this, like, Zoom call with a bunch of players and FIDE officials, and Noderbeck, like, specifically... asked about open tournaments. He was like, we have to play two open tournaments. So it's clear it's on his mind and it's on my mind. And Arjun, obviously, he's playing to try to get there.
So you're playing one, at least, US Masters, yeah?
Is that your... Probably.
Is that one of your events?
Probably, yeah. It's not, like, official, but...
Let's make it official here on podcast, on the C-Squared
podcast. Well, I won't make things official yet, but... but it's... It will count.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, all these opens are, like, on the same dates, like Lobergott Open, the Singapore Open, the Masters Open. Okay, that's not anyone's fault, just that the organizers decided to all organize on, like, November 28th, which just makes it difficult to find opens that count. If you actually look for opens that count, it's very difficult to find one.
Big point of discussion, Rabbit and Blitz. Cost of attendance is high.
What?
Rent is too damn high.
Oh, the actual prices are high.
No, not the prices. The prices of finding hotel.
Yeah, the hotel price.
Yeah. Yeah. Between 25th and the 1st, you have to stay all the way until the 1st because they added a new day, a rest day, a Chess Davos day. It's some sort of a conference where we will see the intersectionality between chess and finance.
Okay, I'm not very interested in that, with all due respect.
Chess and finance, my friend. And
we're playing over the new year. We will...
31st. Yeah.
We will be in New York for the new year. I mean, I'll play, almost for sure.
I'm going to try to play as well.
Yeah, you should. It's a good event. Like, on the one hand, I'm glad it's in the United States.
I mean, for us, it's fine. Yeah, for us, it's good.
Yeah.
But for Europeans that are coming
here... Yeah.
It's going to be such a mess.
No, like, I understand that all my complaints last year can basically apply the other way.
Yes.
On the other hand, like, okay, it's a somewhat selfish view, but, you know, it's almost always in either Central Asia, Eastern Europe, this event. So that is, like, one time in the United States. The Canadas wasn't Toronto, that's true. They're, like, they're branching back over to North America, but...
What I do hope to see is discount rates for hotels.
That won't happen.
That fee they will give. They have to give. They have to give something. Otherwise, the Europeans cannot play. I mean, you're going to have to spend $5,000 to travel to the U.S.
Multiple prices. Okay, so flights depend.
7 days.
I mean, again, if you're not too picky about flights, you can get flights that are, you know, $500 to $1,000.
Between December 24th, let's say.
I mean, you book your trip in advance.
Sure. But it doesn't matter. The dates are just like...
It's not... No, like, flight prices, you can manage. I mean, it's...
I want to try.
For sure.
Yeah. Give me... We'll do it live.
I mean, do you want to do from Europe? Like, Europe will be pretty easy to find cheap flights. Do you want to do it from, like, South Malaysia or...
Let's do Europe. Give me a city in Europe to New York.
I don't know. Let's do Frankfurt. I mean, I don't know.
Frankfurt. I'm actually curious. To New York... And I'm going to put December.
Well, again, you don't want to kill yourself, so you can arrive December 24th. But you do have to cover the extra hotel nights if you...
Correct.
Hotels are extremely expensive in New York.
Yes. It's too much so. Okay, you're right. $700 from Frankfurt.
I mean, it depends where you're coming from, but yeah, you will find cheap flights. $700. If you're...
That's not bad.
Yeah.
That's not bad. But that puts you at eight days, I think, in a hotel.
Okay, so basically with Manhattan. With New York hotels, Manhattan hotels, I've checked. I've also spent a lot of time in New York. You have a few options. One is that you get a decent hotel, which is going to be a very small room, probably about 150 square feet, like 15 square meters.
That's small.
It's very small. It's like half of a normal European size room. And you're paying $300 a night, let's say.
Okay.
Which is going to be a very average hotel. And you don't share it, so you pay. The other option is you share a room. You get share like a normal hotel room. Again, not great if it's a small hotel room. Or you can maybe find something a bit bigger to pay on the location that maybe is around the same price. Maybe you'll find 300 square feet.
Yes.
The other option is you go for the garbage. You don't care where you're staying.
Garbage meaning what? Outside of Manhattan?
No. That's another option. The garbage is like, there are actual garbage hotels. I mean, two-star hotels, hostels. You could stay at the YMCA. You could bunk with 12 other people.
That's a bit dangerous.
You're still spending $100 a night for sure, at the very least. Or you could go with the rats. There's some hotels that are maybe rat infested. Which you don't want to do. Or the third option is like you stay in Jersey City and you commute on the train every
day.
That's
like an hour and a half.
No.
No. With traffic? To Manhattan?
No. The trains. I mean, half an hour.
Half an hour. Okay. But the trains are dangerous in New York City right now.
I never had issues.
That's because I haven't been there in 20 years ago.
I haven't been there since 2019, so I don't know. But generally speaking, you don't want to travel. Like in New York, in Manhattan, you either walk or you take the subway. You don't drive in New York.
Definitely.
It's a disaster. Walking is a good option, but yeah, it can take a while.
Yeah. But
I looked at hotels in New York. It was very entertaining because you can find like cheap stuff that's like the worst.
No, but they will definitely give some discounts. They must. They have to.
I don't know.
They have to, and probably it's going to be first come, first serve. But they have to give some discounts, cut some deals with New York hotels and give some discounts because otherwise you're just going to get killed.
Are we playing in the financial district?
Yeah.
Is that?
Okay. Wall Street. On Wall Street. That's what they said.
Oh, okay.
That's kind of their whole point. They want to attract sponsors from finance companies, which makes sense. Look, nothing against that. We need more money in chess. Find it. That's a good idea. Sure. But you also have to be somewhat accommodating to the vast majority of players.
Yeah.
Yeah, you will probably get conditions, obviously.
Right? No, 27, it's in the rules. 2750 in any rating list in the last year.
You will condition.
You'll get a hotel.
Yeah.
And
that makes sense.
Yeah, which is, I mean, maybe they could lower, but then they are giving hotels to a lot of people. Because the 27, like if we take 2700, there are a lot of people who hit that in any of the one rating lists. Like, also, I feel like there is some incentive to, like, you know, push your rating up a little bit. Especially like in Blitz, where it's you know, you can always find some. I mean, there's some incentive for that because you save so much money.
Yeah, we're not going to get into that. We're hoping for a fair play. Cool. All right, Fabi, I think you're getting hot. I'm getting hot.
And it's like 100 degrees.
It's like 100 degrees. I'm going to jump in the pool.
Okay.